Joining us now, one of our friends of the show, one of our favorite analysts on TV, Billy Kratzer joins us. Billy, welcome into the Golf Shop.
Well, thank you, Mark.
You know, right out of the gate, I want to ask you. Mike and I, he was on the phone with me earlier for one of our earlier segments, and we had a chance to ask a question of, when we close the books on the 2017 U.S. Open, will Aaron Hills be remembered for the good or the bad? Because when you go back and you talk about Chambers Bay, sometimes you kind of remember more of the fact that, you know, the greens were terrible, the spectators had a hard time getting and seeing things, more than we really remember Jordan Spieth winning the golf tournament. So what do you think is going to happen in 2017 with Aaron Hills?
Well, certainly it's going to be interesting because it's a venue, and it's the first U.S. Open that has been held in the state of Wisconsin. Obviously, other major championships, the PGA Championship at Whistling Straits. But I think it's going to be interesting to see how the players react. Early in the week, players have voiced their concerns about the golf course, about the rough, about the height of the rough. I think there's, a considerable amount of wind, but I think when we walk away from this in the heartland of America, we may get mixed reviews. Certainly when we go to a Shinnecock or we go to a Pebble Beach where we're going in the next couple of years, we continually talk about how great it is. What is going to make Aaron Hills great? I don't know, because no one has seen this golf course. No one has played, other than a U.S. amateur, no one has played a championship on this golf course. So I don't know what its legacy is going to be, but I think right now, as we talk about Aaron Hills, I think the players are going to be highly critical of the way the golf course was chosen. And if Mike Davis and the USGA get this set up, if they get it just the slight bit wrong with the wind, they're in for their third consecutive year of criticism.
Yeah, you played in several U.S. Opens. What was your expectation as a player going into a U.S. Open about what the conditions were going to be? I mean, were you just in your mind thinking, all right, this is going to be brutal? Par is an excellent score. I know the rough's going to be hideous. The greens are going to be fast. What was your expectation and what was your thought process going into U.S. Opens?
25-yard fairways, 4 to 6 inch deep rough, very little intermediate cut of rough. There was not that extended rough to where it was graduated out. I knew that if I hit the ball in the rough, that I was going to have to somehow figure out a way to make par. And I knew the greens were going to be lightning fast. I knew the greens were going to be firm, given that the weather was cooperating. So you kind of knew at that point exactly what to expect. And I think that's a great question, Mark, because has the USGA lost its identity as to how it wants to provide a championship for the best players in the world? I happen to think so. I think right now, most of the championships that have been held, you look at Chambers Bay, you look at Aaron Hills, you look at Oakmont with the trees and the way that they've taken all the trees out. The U.S. Open has now started to look more like an Open championship than a U.S. Open championship.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Have we gone to golf courses that I don't even know if you call it, Dustin Johnson, Jason Day, Rory McIlroy proof. I mean, where these guys can't hit it 350 yards, but you still give these guys the advantage because they can take these driving iron things that they have now that are bent down and they're going 280 yards off the tee and they can hit it about 5 feet off the deck and run it out there 280 yards. I mean, does that now change the dynamic back that we've put these guys back in play again because they can hit it further than everybody else with a shorter club and be more consistent with it? So, again, have we tried to do something and lost our identity like you said?
I think so. How do you Dustin Johnson proof, or how do you, as we used to say, tiger-proof a golf course? We found out that to Tiger Proof a golf course, you do not do it by length. You do it with narrow fairways. You do it with accuracy. You do it with the firmness of the greens, and you make it challenging for the players to hit quality shots. I remember back at Shinnecock Hills, I watched Vijay Singh first hole take it a driver as far as he could take it, put a wedge in his hand because that's when they were using square grooves, and then you engineer a shot from there. I think for the U.S. Open to regain what they've been all about, you need to put efficiency back in the game. How many fairways can I hit? Hey, everyone, Curtis Strange, 5 U.S. Opens between the two players. They did it with efficiency. They were never long off the tee, but they were very accurate. And I think that's the identifying quality that we need to get back to for the U.S. Open.
Yeah, I mean, and getting back to the classic golf courses, I mean, you know, there's a difference between, you know, you narrow the fairways, like you said earlier, you have a primary rough or a secondary cut of rough or whatever you want, an intermediate, secondary cut. You know, where are the days where if you hit one, you know, 20 yards off the center of the fairway, you had to pitch it out back to the fairway and hit a wedge onto the green, as opposed to hitting it, you know, Aaron Hills 7 yards off or 7 feet off the fairway and maybe not finding your golf ball? I mean, when did that come into play, and when did that become part of the mantra for a setup of a U.S. Open? I mean, ideally, what's your ideal U.S. Open course and U.S. Open setup? If you were the one running the show and I said, Billy, pick me a venue for 2018, what would it be?
Well, I'm not going to stray from where we're going. We're looking at Shinnecock Hills, and we're looking at Pebble Beach. But you look at a Wingfoot, you look at a Southern Hills, you look at a Medina, you look at all the great golf courses, a Wingfoot, all these golf courses that have held the U.S. Open and have held major championships, they've withstood the test of time, and there's a reason for it. And the U.S. Open needs to get back to where they were, understand what they are all about. You're not trying to be the Open Championship. You're not trying to be in this wide open area to where you have fescue right, fescue left, and you deal with the wind. That's not what the U.S. Open is about, at least in my opinion. The U.S. Open, tree-lined, rough, you hit it in the rough, you toss it back, and then you try to figure it out from there. I think it was more challenging. I think more players were pent up with, you know, where's my skill level right now? Can I find enough fairways to actually compete?
Right.
I think you need to go back to that, Mark.
Yeah. Again, Billy Kratzert, one of our favorite TV analysts, is joining us. And Billy, we're talking U.S. Open. Do you think maybe the PGA of America is getting it more right with the golf courses that they're selecting and the kind of events that we seem to be getting from them, where, you know, birdies are abundant, but if you make a mistake, you know, plenty of bogeys and double bogeys are out there. Not afraid to let guys make birdies, but at the same time, you hit a bad shot, you're getting penalized for it. I'm almost feeling like, for me as a fan, the PGA is a better show to watch than maybe the U.S. Open the last few years.
I'm a big fan of Kerry Hague, and he's in charge of everything inside the ropes, the setup of the golf course, how he wants it to play. I'm a huge fan, and you're right on the money when you say that it allows the players to showcase their skills. These are the best players in the world. Would I want to go to an NBA championship and somehow make the rules a little different and stifle the ability of the players that are the greatest in the world? Same in football, same in hockey, same in baseball, same in tennis. I think that you need to allow these players a chance to show everyone what they can do. I mean, these players, when you look at a player on tour, And sure, there are numbers that are going to reach 23, 24 under par. But players that win week in and week out, they are making 20 birdies plus per tournament. That's what people want to see. They want to see great shots. They want to see players hit it close on a par five and make eagle. They want to see a par four where they hit a wedge and with the possibility of making it. They want to see a short par three, like the 17th at Sawgrass, to where you have a chance to make a hole in one. So I just think that, you know, there's something missing with the U.S. Open, as I view it, not allowing these players. It's almost like they handcuff them.
Yeah, and all right, so let's shift gears a little bit. The Travelers Championship coming up after the U.S. Open, near and dear to your heart. Back then in 1977, it was the Sammy Davis Jr. Greater Hartford Open. You are one of the past champions of this tournament. This is the scene of the crime. Last year, Jim Furyk shoots 58. On a par 70 golf course, do you still consider that the threshold now? I mean, I know there was a lot of debate over 58, 59. Has to be 13 under to get to 59 on a par 72. I mean, is Jim Furyk's the score, the threshold now, or are you still holding on to the 59s at par 72s?
I'm thinking 14 under.
Yeah.
I think when you really look at the at what the players have done, David Duvall, the last guy prior to this year, 1999, David Duvall shot 59. He was 13 under par. And when you look at Adam Hadwin, he was 13 under par. I think that until someone shoots 14 under par, I think the conversation just kind of says, okay, you're 12, you're 11, you're whatever, you're 13. But 13 under has been done twice since 1999. And I think if anyone was to get to 14 under, that would be absolutely sensational.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, I mean, we've had other tours. Stefan Jaeger, that we talk about on this time show all the time on the web.com tour, shoots 58 last year and has won a couple events this year. So it's just an interesting argument. I mean, there's both sides of the fence. I don't care. I still think 58's obviously a phenomenal number. I don't care what the par of the golf course is. I mean, I always tell people, hey, if you want to argue it, that's fine. If you want to go tee it up on the ladies' tee at your local golf course and a par 72, go out there and see what you can shoot and see how hard it is to shoot a low number from whatever tees you're shooting from, right?
Hey, exactly. And I'm in total agreement. In fact, I can tell you the best I have ever done on a par 71 is 60. And 11 under par, that's two shots less, and 60 used to be the number that, you know, you kind of went, okay, 59, yeah, that's great, 58. But I have to tell you, Mark, the number 14, minus 14, if someone can post minus 14 in a round of golf, whether it be a 56, 57, or 58, that's the mark.
Cool. Well, Billy, man, we always love having you on the show. Appreciate you taking the time out to be with us, and we look forward to catching up with you again. Maybe we'll do it before the PGA Championship when we can actually go see some guys make some birdies all the time on a golf course here in Charlotte.
Yeah, going back to Quail Hollow, the renovation, that should be exciting as well. So, yeah, always looking forward to it, and thanks for having me on, Mark.
All right. Well, thanks a lot.